the surface and one at some depth and one at another depth, extrapolate or interpolate between all those depths, and come up with a vertical profile of whatever the properties were we were trying to measure. And we do that once a month, and we say, okay, this is July, and then we go do that in August, September, and so on, come back the next July and do it again and say, oh, this is July again, and look, it's different, or it's the same, and it's the same because of some reason, or it's different because of global change, or it's different because of anthropogenic influences. But we really didn't have enough samples to say that. Sometimes we go out on a ship and we do more depth because you've got bigger machinery and more equipment and you can do finer resolution profiling. But you can't go out as often because ships cost a lot of money. So we've got better resolution but less temporal coverage. And the whole oceanographic community is fighting this sampling frequency problem. And different people around the country have come up with different ways to try and address it. And I'm going to talk about the way that we have come up, and that's by using what we call orca buoys. So we've come up with these orca buoys, oceanic remote chemical optical analyzers. Here's a picture of one, and you can't really tell much. It just looks like a yellow thing with some solar panels. Here are two people standing on one of them, so it gives you an idea of how big it is. The people are actually working on the winch, which is one of the integral components of the orca moorings, because the winch lowers and raises a sensor package through the water so that we get a continuous profile from the sensors that we have deployed on the sensing package. And then you can see, you know, the tide comes in and out, and the sun, mean-looking sun. Well, that's the sun. That was the moon, the mean-looking moon. The sun comes, anyway. So we've got four of these things out in Puget Sound currently. Three of them are in Lower Hood Canal, and I'll get to the reason for that later on. There's one up here in Admiralty Inlet. There's actually another one over here off up by Edmonds, where they're siting the sewage treatment plant. It's not quite working at the moment. We're going to get that fixed. Anyway, we've got these things. And the reason we have more than one is because things are different in different parts of the sound. Here is what I'm showing you is screenshots from our website. And at the end of the talk, the last slide I put up is going to have three websites if you want to write them down. So don't sit there saying, give me the website. I'll give you the website. But what I'm showing here, and I'll show a lot of plots like this, this is depth on this axis. Frequently it'll say pressure, but depth and pressure in oceanography speak are sort of the same. 50 decibars is 50 meters, 100 decibars is 100 meters. And then the variables will be on the x-axis. And these are three profiles of temperature, salinity, and density within Hood Canal, and these are three profiles out in Admiralty Inlet up in here. And they're different. So this is one of the reasons we need more than one. Actually, we need a whole bunch of buoys, but we only have four or five, is because things are different in different parts of the canal. This is August. They're both August 2007. You can see that it's warm within Hood Canal. The surface layer is warm. It's got low salinity, so it's got a lot of fresh water in it. And it's low density, so it sort of floats on the denser water underneath. And the plants, the floating layer is up where the sun is, and the plants can grow there, and they can make chlorophyll, and they photosynthesize, and they produce oxygen, and then they die. And then they sink down to depth, and they decompose and consume oxygen. So you would expect high oxygen up here, low oxygen down here, and a big chlorophyll layer there. And over here, you don't see that stratified surface layer, so you wouldn't expect such high oxygens and chlorophylls and low oxygen down below. And that's exactly what you see. This is oxygen. Both of these, I think this is Microsoft cyan. I think that's this color. These are the oxygen profiles in micromoles per kilogram or percent saturation, but it doesn't matter. You can see it's high at the surface. It's low at the bottom. Here's that chlorophyll maximum. There's actually a point right there at 40 milligrams per cubic meter, which is quite a bit of chlorophyll in the water. This dotted line here is something, this is the line that we're calling hypoxia. It's 2 milligrams per liter. It's where the oxygen finally gets low enough that certain fish species become stressed and other, you know, life forms become stressed, and they don't really like it when it becomes hypoxic. So they try to avoid that situation. But you can see we're almost hypoxic in Hood Canal here. None of that happens over here in Admiralty Inlet. Okay. Besides the six variables I just showed you, on some of the buoys, some of the times, we also measure nitrate. So these are the same things I just showed you. But some of the buoys, we measure nitrate concentration. We measure photosynthetically available radiation. That's how much energy there is for photosynthesis, solar energy. And we measure the water currents. And those will come handy later in the talk. If you go to our website, you can also see graphics like this. This is a time series. So here's that pressure I was talking about, but you can think of it as 30 meters. This is January to December. It's 2008. And the reason it's 2008, the reason you know it's 2008, I don't know if you remember. In early December 2008, we had this horrendous rainstorm. We had like 5 inches of rain in the Puget Sound Basin. There was like 9 to 11 inches of rain in the Hood Canal Basin. And what I'm showing you here is salinity. This and the hot colors, the reds, are high concentrations, and the cool colors, the blues, are low concentrations. So this is low salinity. This actually, the salinity right there during that December rainstorm is off scale on our plot. The water is so fresh in the surface layer right there. There's another interesting thing in here. I don't know if you can see it, but this is the darkest red in the whole period. And that's because there's ocean water coming in and sliding down and layering. It's dense and high salinity, and it's layering under the water that's in the canal and displacing some of the other water up and out of the canal. You can see things in the oxygen distribution. Here's a very high oxygen concentration here, and it corresponds with this high chlorophyll concentration, so that's photosynthetically produced. This is a spring bloom that took place in the lower part of Hood Canal. We're looking at data from this buoy there. A spring bloom that took place started in the end of January and went into early February, really early. I mean, this was something that really surprised us, but it's common over there in this part of the canal and probably in similar areas in other parts of Puget Sound. You can see another spring bloom here and more chlorophyll. Now you can see that the oxygen generally follows the chlorophyll. And the chlorophyll layer, the high chlorophyll layer, actually ends up at about 10 meters throughout most of the summer, and that's because of nutrient limitation, light limitation. That's a balance that ends up there. Okay, so you can see that kind of stuff on our website. Now, I'm going to tell you three stories about what we've learned, and they're not stories. Give you three examples of the kinds of things we learned in Hood Canal. The first one has to do with variability. How variable are these profiles that we see? So we went out in the month of July. Well, we didn't go out. The buoys are anonymous. They do this by themselves. So the buoy was out there, and there's a lot of solar energy. We profile 12 times a day. In the month of July, we did 372 profiles. And this is all 372 profiles of oxygen, chlorophyll, and nitrate. So here's depth. Here's oxygen, chlorophyll, and nitrate. And there's all 372 profiles. The black line is the mean July, in this case, oxygen concentration. So that's the mean condition in July. But if you were to go out there any one time and sample that, you could get this one, you could get that one, you could get this one. I'm not even sure what, you know. But you could get any one of those profiles. So you need to do it more than once. Odds are, if you just do it once, you're not going to get anything that's like the mean profile. Anyway, you can see the same thing in July. You can see that in oxygen, you can see it in chlorophyll, and you can see it in nitrate. You can see that if you went out, you'd get a different chlorophyll maximum depth, depending on when you're out there, anywhere between 3 meters and 17 meters, and the real depth is like 7 or 8 or 9. So there's lots of variability. What causes this variability? Well, there's two things that contribute to the variability. One is the sort of non-homogeneous distribution of stuff in Hood Canal. And I'm going to show you some maps of the density and chlorophyll around the Great Bend, which is this part of Hood Canal, where the canal actually almost turns around on itself. So this is the Great Bend. This is density. Sigma T is sort of ocean speak for density. And this is chlorophyll. This is 15 kilometers. This is about 10 kilometers. And what you can see is these filaments of these filaments of high density and these blobs of chlorophyll. You can see these features with scale lengths of kilometers. So there's these kilometer scale features out there. And this shows up in, you know, I haven't got it up here, but oxygen and chlorophyll and things like that. So there's these kilometer scale features. And there's also also smaller scale features. So I'm going to show you a 1,200 by 1,200 meter grid that we did around that buoy. This is in October, by the way, of 08. This was done in April 07. So here's dissolved oxygen, 1,200-meter grid around the buoy, and here's chlorophyll. And again, the hot colors are high concentrations. The cool colors are low concentrations. So this is a big blob of high oxygen water right here at the surface, and this is a big blob of high chlorophyll water, and they correspond, again, because the phytoplankton are making oxygen. In photosynthesis, you can see low chlorophyll, low oxygen. The scale lengths on these features are on the order of hundreds of meters. So these are smaller features, and then there are these very sharp fronts. This is a front between high and low oxygen water masses. You can think of that like a front between high atmospheric pressure and low, you know, like a warm front or a cold front kind of thing, but it's an oxygen front. So you can imagine if these things are out there, you could sample anywhere in here and get something a little different. And on top of that, I mean, superimposed on all this is tidal excursion in the Sound. So when the tide goes out, that's out. When the tide goes out, the water moves that way about 6 to 10 kilometers. And when the tide comes in this way, it's another 6 to 10, you know, it comes back 6 to 10 kilometers. So you've got these things moving around out there, and that's the reason you get all this variability in those profiles. So that's the first example. The second example has to do with fish kills in Puget, in Hood Canal. And this is the whole reason we actually have the buoys there. In 2003, there was a fish kill that that resulted in a recreational sport fishery closure in Hood Canal. And, you know, there's a lot of retired people out there, and they couldn't go fishing, and they got all up in arms, and they got all concerned. They said, "We got to fix this," and they pushed their politicians to fix it, whatever the politicians could do. All they could do was throw money at the problem. So the people were thinking, you know, it's got to do with septics, it's got to do with lawn fertilizers, it's got to do with pet wastes. These fish kills are becoming more and more frequent. So there was this study instituted to try and figure out why these fish kills happened. And the prevailing theory at the time, which is probably correct, was the fish kills are due to low oxygen events and the fish actually suffocate. So there was another fish kill in 2006, and we had our buoys out at that point. And we were able to tell exactly what happened during the fish kill. So I'm going to show you data from that buoy right there off of Hoodsport. And here's the oxygen distribution. Again, these yellows and reds are high concentrations, and the blues and purples are low concentrations. And this is not the best color scheme for the projector. But we have some data dropouts, but fortunately not during the fish kill event itself. So we had low oxygen at about 25 meters. Purple was really low. And you can see that oxygen sort of shoaled from about whatever this is, September 9th to September 18th or so, until it was up at about 10 meters water depth. The fish tried to avoid this, so they all ended up congregating right in here. They wanted to be in the oxygen, but they didn't want to be at the surface. They sort of congregate there. And this shoaling is caused by that influx of high salinity water that comes in the fall, so it pushed this low oxygen water up, but it couldn't displace the buoyant, you know, fresher surface water layer up here. But then something happened on the 19th that just totally blew away the top surface layer, and blew away is actually what happened. We had our first big windstorm of the year, and this shows the wind record. So here's zero. Everything in this above zero is from the south. Everything below zero is from the north. So there's a big southerly wind over here, sustained southerly wind, and that actually literally just pushed the surface water northward in the canal, and you can't really push a hole in the canal. So the deep water down here, this low oxygen water, upwelled to fill that hole. There was no oxygen in the water. The fish had nothing to breathe, and they suffocated. So we thought we had a pretty good explanation. We put this into a numerical simulation model that does the circulation of Hood Canal, driven by the tides and by the freshwater input. And we got the circulation model running. And then we imposed, let me go back. Then we imposed this wind field on the computer model, and looked at where the upwelling was most intense. And the red shows the intensity of the upwelling. And you can see the most intense upwelling is along the western shore and the southern end of the canal. And this is exactly where the fish kill took place. So we learned about the fish kill. That's the second example. The third one has to do with, okay, so the reason people think the oxygen is low and maybe is getting lower and maybe these fish kills are becoming more frequent is because maybe there's nitrogen coming from septic fields or fertilizers or so on that is causing plants to grow and then sink and die and remove oxygen. So we were trying to do a nitrogen budget for Hood Canal, so we took the average July and August concentrations of nitrate that we measured with the buoy. These are the average currents that we measured, and you can see that there's an increase in the nitrate between July, the blue, and August. And then we can multiply the concentration times the flow to get the flux, and then we can construct a nitrogen budget for this end of the canal between Hood's Port and Union and Belfair. So here's Union, here's Belfair, here's depth, here's a little box for our model. We measured this, we measured that, and we measured this with the buoy. So we know those things pretty good because we got lots of measurements there. Another group measured this. Nick Ward is part of the group that actually, he's going to talk after the next speaker, that measured this part. And we're able to figure out this is the amount of nitrogen that's actually causing the oxygen drawdown. It's 39. 2.4 to 3.2 are from anthropogenic influences, so we got like 5 to 10% of the oxygen drawdown due to people. Now, we take this and we pass it off to the managers who have got to decide whether this is significant, what to do about it. Once you figure out what to do about it, can you afford it and can you sell it to the taxpayer? So that's their job. Okay, so that's this. In the future, we're going to work on a couple of things. One of them is PCO2, a.k.a. ocean acidification, which I'll talk about, and harmful algal blooms, which I won't get to. We're working on the ocean acidification with the NOAA PMEL group out at Sam Point. We put one of their CO2 analyzers on one of our really ugly buoys. That buoy's been out there for 5 years. And we get records that look like this. So here's the PCO2 record, this blue line, from July to about today. This is, and I'm only going to talk about it from July to about October. The red line is atmospheric equilibrium, and when the two things are at blue line is below the red line, then the ocean is undersaturated with CO2, and it's in nice conditions for oyster spawning. And when it's above, the ocean's a little bit acidic, and it's not so nice conditions for oyster spawning. And there's an oyster emergency right now. That's one of the reasons for this, off the coast. The oysters are planktonic. They settle, and then they're supposed to grow their shells. They're doing that, but when they settle, they don't grow their shells, and it's either because the water is too acid or because there's this Vibrio tubaeoshi thing that is giving them a disease. So we're working on that, and we're trying to get a buoy network for Puget Sound, and I'm not going to go through that because I just got the time's up signal. But we want to get to this point where we got buoys in these places in Puget Sound. We currently have the red ones and the green ones, and we're trying to get the pink ones and the blue ones, and really quickly, skipping all that. Here's the three websites that I told you I'd get to, and I think I have time for questions. Right, now, do I do this or do you do this? And you raise your hand first and you raise your hand second. And speak up so they can hear you.
How did you get the spatial distribution maps with a static buoy?
I was trying to hurry up so I could get through all the slides and I didn't make it. The way we did that was we took a 19-foot tide runner and took our instrument package and a bunch of ropes and lashed it underneath the hull. And we had a GPS and we just did zigzags back and forth all around the lower end of the Great Bend. And Bob had a question?
So if only two of the 39 nitrate units that they have are coming from septic tanks, what's the other 37?
Oh, the other 37 are, that's a very important question. The other 37 are the natural input from the marine environment. So there's nitrate that's normally coming in just with the general circulation of the canal, and that's the natural condition. And there's two to three extras put on top of that. Well, we've only been doing this for, we really only had enough data to do this for about 3 years. And again, I mean, you know, you can't get a trend out of 3 years. This is very much like, you know, global warming. Is it real? You know, is there an anthropogenic influence? I don't, you know, probably. most likely in both cases there's something going on, but you got to have a lot of data and a long-term time series to show that. Yes? I should have been repeating the question. Did anybody try to put together the Fishkill history, and is there higher frequency in recent years? Again, I'm not sure we have a long enough history to actually give a yes or no answer to that, but it appears that the Fishkills have become a little more frequent. We've had three of them in this decade, I'm not sure about the rest, but I'm pretty sure that's more frequent than it used to be. But I'm not exactly sure. I'm not totally sure. Yes?
Regarding that, wouldn't people that live on the canal be a great resource for finding that out? I mean, they would know.
That's how we know what happened 20 years ago. And, you know, and you can go back to Native American records further, you know, beyond that. So we know there have been fish kills for a very long time. I didn't point out that the canal is actually naturally prone to low oxygen because of its geology. It's got a shallow sill and it's deep inside, so it's hard to circulate that deep water inside. It doesn't connect well with the broader ocean. Okay, I think I'm out of time.
Thank you.
Seth.
Thank you, Dr. Duvall. I just hated to show you those time cards. I wanted you to keep going, so.